All right, good morning, everybody. I'm going over the regular schedule Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, November 13, 2018, and ask everybody to please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again, and good morning. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda or really anything you'd like to comment on. Anybody wishing to do so, come right on up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to bid opening for the Story County Justice Center re-roofing project. Gopi and Leanne.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning, guys.
Now that you have it.
I'm going to open them and read them, and Lynn's going to record them.
Perfect.
And you have a tally sheet in front of you. I did highlight the two, since we have two back-to-back bid openings. So make sure you have the one that has Justice Center on the top, please.
Okay.
I needed to do it for myself.
All right. Are you ready?
Yep.
First one is for Central States Roofing.
Okay.
Bid bond. References page. Acknowledgement of Addenda 1. All right. Show base bid of $319,200. 319,200.00 for alternate 1, $358,800, 358,800.00 alternate 2, $335,600. 335,600.00 Academy Roofing.
We are from
Des Moines.
Thank you.
This thing is
It looks to me like your finger's sharper than that letter over there.
It's looking that way.
Go get scissors.
I think we're okay. It works on that one. All right. Bid bond is included. Acknowledgement of addendum one. All right. Base bid. $396,700. 396,700.00. Alternate one, $548,500. 548,500.00. Alternate two, $459,900. 459,900.00. Next one is from 316 Construction Group out of Ames, Iowa. Bond is included. Acknowledgement of addendum one. Price for alternate one, $480.
This is base bid or alternate one?
Alternate one.
Okay.
No bid for base bid.
Okay.
Alternate one is $482,191. 482,191.00. Alternate two, $417,422. 417,422.00.
The process is you'll acknowledge receipt of the bids today. We'll come back next week. Ideally, that's what the tentative schedule does outline. The review committee, my apologies, will be reviewing the three proposals, formulate a recommendation for the board for next week, and then get the contract the following week. The committee that we're looking at right now with your approval would include Joby, John Eichholz, Alyssa Wignall, Todd Lundvall, and then Ethan and myself just to help with the process. Do you have any questions?
No questions. So what I would look for is for acknowledgement of receipt of bids and direction to staff to have an ad hoc committee get together and review and make a recommendation.
And so move as just stated by Supervisor Sanders.
Motion and a second. Discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chief. Sanders. Aye. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Next item for us is receive and review bids for the sale of bonds for $1 million. This is third phase of Sodesco Environmental Learning Corridor. Renee Tweet and Leanne Hart.
Oh, I didn't see you right there.
I'm hiding in the front row.
Leanne was giving me the, where is Renee Tweet?
Yeah.
Right there in the front row.
You snuck in the back of me.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I delivered personally this bid for $1 million to 9 different banks around Story County, and I have only received one back, so my part will be easy.
Okay.
This bid will go to, I'm assuming it's okay to say that, Great Western Bank, a interest rate of 3.94 for 10 years.
Can you repeat that? 3.94
for 10 years. I did bring a copy if you all wanted one.
And who's it from again?
Great Western Bank.
Okay.
Which not long ago, that one seemed high, but I think as you see the Fed moving.
With the volatile rates, I'm really not surprised. I kind of expected at least two or three, but.
Historically, this will be seen as cheap money, so.
Can we get a recommendation on this next week as well?
Yeah, the resolution will be on your agenda to approve the loan agreement.
Okay. Questions? Yeah. Motion to acknowledge receipt of the loan bid.
I move acknowledgement of the bid from Great Western Bank. Have a
second.
Further discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys have a good day. So Renee is busy helping run the our veteran supermarket that's going on today. And so she's out the door. Next item is consideration of proclamation declaring the week of November 10th through the 18th, 2018, as National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Month. Carla Webb. Carla?
Hi there. Thank you for having me. The National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week is November 10th through the 18th, and we do have agency representation today from the City of Ames. We have Vanessa, United Way, Sarah, Access Staff, and then Troy with the Emergency Residence Project. So thank you all for being here today. We appreciate it. Did I miss anybody? Okay, good. Per the Hunger and Homelessness website, 43.1 million Americans live below the poverty level. 549,000 Americans are homeless on a typical night. 42 million Americans are at risk of suffering from hunger, and 1 in 5 children live in poverty. Based on data collected by Iowa Community Alliance in 2017, there were 12,932 Iowans homeless in 2017, many served by emergency shelters, transitional housing programs, and rapid rehousing projects. It is recommended affordable household expenses should not exceed a third of a household's income. Households with incomes below 30% of the county median are at considerable more risk for homelessness than households with higher income. In Story County in 2017, there were 6,715 households living below 30% of the median income, which in 2016 that was 51,201. This left 80 affordable living units available. Per Feeding America, most recent data in 2016, there were 14,660 individuals who were food insecure living in Story County. Currently, there is a collaboration in Story County looking at a coordinated entry process for homeless prevention services for rent and utility assistance. With data provided by the Emergency Residence Project, City of Ames, the Salvation Army, Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, and Story County Community Services, collectively, these agencies provided $711,152 toward rental assistance in fiscal year 2017 and 2018. This assisted 2,496 households. Many individuals are living paycheck to paycheck and at any time due to life circumstances could be at risk of homelessness. We thank the Board of Supervisors for considering the National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week proclamation.
So, questions for Carl before we read the proclamation? Okay, Story County, Iowa Proclamation, National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. Whereas, for the past 26 years, the National Coalition for the Homeless and the National Student Campaign Against Hunger and Homelessness have sponsored National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. And whereas, The purpose of the proclamation is to educate the public about the many reasons people are hungry and homeless, including the shortage of affordable housing in Story County for very low-income residents, and to encourage support for homeless assistance service providers, as well as community service opportunities for students and school service organizations. And whereas there are many organizations committed to sheltering and providing supportive services, as well as meals and food supplies to the homeless, which include but are not limited to Assault Care Center extending shelter and support access, Emergency Residence Project, Food at First, Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, Mid-Iowa Community Action, Story County Community Services, the Hunger Collaboration, the Salvation Army, Veterans Affairs, Youth and Shelter Services. Whereas the focus of National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week 2018 continues to be resolved to fight poverty, and whereas we recognize that hunger and homelessness continues to be a serious problem for many individuals and families in Story County, and whereas the intent of the National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week is consistent with the commitment and dedication of the members of the Two Rivers region to educate the community and provide the needed services and support to citizens who suffer from hunger and or homelessness circumstances. Therefore, the Story County Board of Supervisors, Iowa, do hereby proclaim November 10th through the 18th, 2018, as National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. On behalf of our community, we encourage all citizens to recognize that many people do not have housing and need support from citizens and private and public nonprofit service entities. Anything further or a motion to adopt the proclamation?
I just want to thank everybody who has worked year after year after year to continue to fight poverty in this county, and that even the faces are out here, poverty and homelessness, and there will be more faces coming in the future, but thank you all so much, because you do the work that some people just would lose heart on. But you guys continue to make slow, steady progress, and the wins are important. So thank you very much, and I'll make the motion. That way.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So motion and a second. Just underscore what Supervisor Olson just said. It is vital that we find a way to break this cycle of poverty. And what we absolutely know is that once somebody is homeless, they are more susceptible to becoming homeless again and again. There's a multitude of answers. I'm proud that Story County in total is supportive of all the myriad of answers, including more affordable housing. But bringing more good-paying jobs and making sure that we have the training necessary so that we can develop a workforce that can get those good-paying jobs. And I'm so appreciative of everybody involved in bringing this proclamation and, as Laura said, the work you guys do on a day-to-day basis to make our community a better place for those most susceptible to some of the problems that we have. Anything further, Board? Olson.
Aye.
Chief. Aye. Sanders.
Aye.
10th through the 18th is National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week in Story County. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is consideration of minutes from November 6th.
Yes,
second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
No personnel actions this week. Claims for the 15th.
Move as presented.
Okay.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Consent agenda.
Yes, listed.
Second.
Motion and second. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders,
aye.
We have four public hearing items today. First one is first consideration of Ordinance 275, amending Chapters 85 and definitions, 87 land division requirements, and Chapter 88 general site planning standards. And Emily, who's not here, so Amelia and Jerry are going to present this. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, boy.
Well, we're giving Emily full credit for doing all the work, right?
For sure.
All right.
Most of it. Got to give credit where credit's due. As you said, Rick, we have four amendments to the county's code of ordinances that we're very proud of. These have been before the Planning and Zoning Commission multiple times, and they've provided insightful discussion, which has been very valuable to the staff as we've crafted the final version. These final versions have been approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission at their November 7th meeting. We have published in the three newspapers established by the Board of Supervisors on November 1st. All four ordinances have been reviewed by the County Attorney's Office, a.k.a. Ethan Anderson. We appreciate his insightfulness. And again, this is the first consideration. Second consideration will be November 20th. So the first ordinance to review amendment is transportation impact analysis. This is an item that was on the Planning and Development's work program. We were to look into an ordinance that would give us the ability to review the impact of proposed development, whether it be industrial, commercial development, impact of residential subdivisions on the county road network and intersections. So I'm going to dive right into the actual amendment. We've provided some definitions under Chapter 85. First thing is level of service, which gets to basically how, you know, what the impact of driving on a particular road is from point A to point B, how many vehicles are on it, how many stops there are, what speed limit you can go. And so that would be a level A if there's minimal impact. So, again, that addresses speed, time travel, freedom of maneuvering, traffic interruptions, comfort, and convenience. And then as you go up in the alphabet, so to speak, there's more traffic involved. There's probably going to be more stops. You're not going to be able to travel at the speed you'd like to. There's going to be more disruptions along your route from point A to point B. We added a definition on traffic calming, which gets to ways to address how to slow down traffic and improve safety. We also have a definition of traffic impact analysis. Traffic impact analysis will be required for all site plans involving commercial and industrial development, as it will be required for major subdivisions, and those will be reviewed at conceptual review at the preliminary plat stage. So we're talking about residential subdivisions with greater than four lots for the most part. So we have definitions for traffic impact analysis, definition for traffic impact study. We also made some adjustments to Chapter 87, which is the division chapter under major subdivisions. So we included some language for traffic impact analysis and traffic impact study. But the heart of this ordinance, where most of the adjustments were made, were in Chapter 88, which is the general site plan standards. And there's really four primary sections. One covers purpose, two covers administration, three covers the contents of the traffic impact analysis, and I'll go through some of these details with you, and then four covers the actual traffic impact study. So I won't go through all of these, but purpose really gets to the heart of what the ordinance is, and it says to allow Story County to determine the safety and congestion impacts and related consequences of proposed major traffic generating uses. It goes on to say that it will require that applicants respond with reasonable proposals to resolve potential negative traffic impacts that their proposed uses will have on county and other nearby streets. Under administration, that's where we get into traffic impact analysis. Again, this will be required for all site plan submittals involving commercial, industrial uses, non-residential uses, as well as major subdivisions. It will require a professional licensed Iowa engineer to submit this information. The full cost is to be borne by the applicant. When you get to D and F, there's language about the, you know, identifying the improvements that might be needed through this analysis, and the ability of the county engineer and the board of supervisors to kind of fold in projects that might be included in the capital improvements planning as well as the budgeting, and also how much of those improvements that are identified would be the responsibility of the applicant. The engineer and the board of supervisors have the ability to waive the traffic impact study. Traffic impact study is broken down into limited impact and complete impact. And limited is when the number of trips generated are from 0 up to 100. That's a limited traffic impact study requirement. If it's more than that, then it's going to be a complete traffic impact requirement. I'll just go through some of the details on the actual analysis. It talks about identifying the existing number of vehicle trips per day. It identifies the number of vehicle trips generated by the proposed development. The analysis shall determine the existing street conditions and intersections within a quarter mile of the proposed improvement. It also talks about providing crash data over the last 10 years. And so, again, based on the numbers that are generated, it will determine whether or not it's a limited study that would be required or a complete study. As far as the actual limited study, there's language in there about providing average daily trip counts during peak hour volumes, projected average daily trips of the development, peak information in the morning and evening, and or weekend traffic volumes, existing and proposed level of service, again, for the area within a quarter of a mile. And it goes on to talk about the limited traffic impact study shall identify improvements, facilities to be installed, or actions to be undertaken to ensure the following. So here's the threshold to make sure that level of service C or higher overall for all publicly dedicated streets and intersections and accesses. There's no reduction in the level of service for existing streets, intersections, and accesses. There's language in there about site distances to provide protections for motorists entering and leaving intersections. And then it goes on into the complete traffic impact study requirements, which if you look at it, there's twice as much information that's required. And again, this would be something that the engineer would provide and would be reviewed by staff, it would be reviewed by the county engineer, and subject to the review of the board of supervisors. I'd be happy to answer any of your questions that you might have.
I do.
Okay,
I
go ahead.
In the event that we would be talking about an intersection where there would be more than one developer within that quarter mile, so how has the staff talked through a scenario like that about what would happen, especially if there were improvements needed down the road, or the developer would need, both developers would need to help pay?
Yeah, there's a provision in here that talks about the two developers can work together to submit one study so that we would take into account both proposed new projects to look at the impacts.
Okay, and so then I'm going to carry that a little further. In the event that one developer doesn't agree with the other developer, what is our mechanism at that point, or do we have any mechanism to try to move forward with improvements?
I don't know that that's specifically addressed in the language. It would be addressed through the review and input process from staff, input from the county engineer, and then these go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, so they're going to have input in it, and then ultimately it would be up to the board of supervisors to weigh in on if there's discrepancies.
Thank you.
That was my question on your question, Laura. So as I see it, if the two developers don't agree, it just means that both developers have to, on their own, pay for a traffic study, which wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And so I'm just trying to figure out.
Well, my question was not on paying for the traffic study itself. It was for the improvements needed down the road. If there was a disagreement between developer A and developer B, how those costs should be split to pay for actual improvement.
But aren't in the Board of Supervisors the entity that ultimately makes that determination?
One, just to clarify.
Absolutely. And the other one I see in this is we still don't have any mechanism to deal with any type of impacts that occur outside that quarter mile. I'm thinking specifically of Cameron Estates, which is a great development. But the impact that it's had at the corner of Cameron School Road and George Washington Carver is pronounced. There was no way for us to review that when it was built. And even with this, there's no real way for us to review it because it's outside the quarter mile.
Can you touch again on the board's waiver abilities?
Yeah, the waiver comes into play after the engineer submits the analysis. It'll determine whether or not it's going to be a limited traffic impact study or a complete study. And based on the information from the actual analysis, that's where the county engineer and or the Board of Supervisors have the authority to, you know, based on information that's provided, waive the detailed traffic study if you determine that it's not necessary.
So my question is, moving forward, assuming the board adopts this on first reading, it seems to me we got a limited number of commercial industrial projects and a limited number of developers that have built what I would consider to be more major type subdivisions. Is there a method for us, assuming we adopt this on first reading, to get this directly into the hands of those that this would have impacted in the past, to get comments from them before we move further?
We included a lot of the engineers, development community, builders in the review of this ordinance and didn't get a lot of input back.
Which doesn't surprise me, but sometimes those individuals and entities, once something passes first reading, will take a new, harder look at something because all of a sudden it becomes real.
Right.
And so I would just ask that we reach out to those. And as limited, I'm not talking about sending a big mailer to anybody, but you guys have all their contact information.
Right.
Just, hey, be aware that this passed on first reading. You may want to take a look at it in case you want to provide comments.
I think it's always good to provide good customer service.
You certainly can do that.
Sometimes, as we've discovered at the board up here, it's difficult to determine who's really impacted or how far that outreach should go. So I'd just like to make note of that because I understand what you're heading for, maybe is these are the people who are the most impacted and they're clearly able to identify them. We're not always able to do that. And so if there's some residents or someone down the road, a property owner who then pays attention after it's all passed, just to make note, we can't always identify everyone who might be impacted.
Sure, and I think it's a great point. I'm not even suggesting that we can identify all the developers that this might impact, but we know who we've worked with in the past that this would have impacted, and it seems reasonable to me that we would gather as much information as we could.
I have no problem passing this on first reading with the expectation Jerry will do an immediate outreach to known developers to get their temperature on this one, because like Rick said, I think you're going to set up straight knowing this is moving.
Yeah, and the engineering firms are great because they may know about somebody who may be headed our way. Okay,
so any further questions? All right, then let's open the public hearing on this traffic study proposal. Anybody wishing to speak to it, come right on up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for consideration.
I move first consideration of ordinance number 275, amending chapters 85, definitions, 87, land division requirements, and chapter 88, general site plan standards, which are traffic impact study and analysis, as presented today.
And set second reading.
Set second reading for next week, November 20th.
I second.
With the caveat that Jerry's planning and zoning office will do outreach to affected parties.
Absolutely. That's outside the motion, though. So the motion is just adopt on first reading. Absolutely right, Marty. Adopt on first reading, set the second reading for the 20th. We'll count on staff to gather as much, or potentially gather as much information as possible. Motion and second. Further discussion? Cheatham?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes first reading today. Come back to us second reading next week. All right. Next item is first consideration of Ordinance 276, amending 88.04 access requirements.
Yep. So this is another one amending our general site planning standards chapter. This one is specific to access requirements, requiring that, well, actually, it's already required that new lots have frontage. But then for lots without frontage or folks that want to use an easement, a shared easement, if they can't meet separation distances between driveways or site distance requirements to set a new driveway, that they have an option to share a drive as well. So this is an existing section in our general site planning standards. You know, I think there was some interest from the private sector on clarifying this ordinance, which is, you know, how things kind of got started. You know, we took it just with a clarification of current requirements to the Planning and Zoning Commission. We got some feedback specifically from Fox Engineering. Scott Renell was concerned about there was an existing provision on limiting the length of a shared easement to 50 feet in length. You know, at the Planning and Zoning Commission, where the October 3rd Planning and Zoning Commission, you know, the commission considered that given that new lots must have frontage and that existing lots are limited to only having four single-family dwellings off an easement if they don't have frontage, that those safeguards are just sufficient to not need to require that 50-foot length limit as well. So staff brought the ordinance amendment back with the length limit removed. We also added a width requirement, though, so 25 feet for a single-family dwelling, 50 feet for more than one single-family dwelling or other uses, just to ensure that there's sufficient room, or 20 feet for a single-family, excuse me.
Right.
So the main amendments that are proposed are, you know, clarifying the ordinance, separating out the requirements for driveways off county roads, frontage requirements for existing lots without frontage, and then frontage requirements for new lots. Those are all kind of mashed together currently. So we wanted to make clear categories with those. We also wanted to clarify the 300-foot separation distance that's required for driveways off county roads and add in that there is a 500-foot site distance requirement. That wasn't previously in there, but it is an existing requirement. Again, we eliminated the 50-foot length limit on shared access easements when a parcel, lot, or tract has frontage. We did maintain that frontage is required for all new lots, but we did clarify that lots created through the residential parcel subdivision process are accepted. That's an existing exception, but it wasn't in this section. It was in the land division requirements under that subdivision. So we just want to put that in there to make sure folks see it. And we also maintained the limit of four dwellings, no more than two-family dwellings, or more than two multiple dwellings. Are allowed to take access via an easement if they don't have frontage. And then finally, we did add those width requirements. So if you have any questions, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval of this at their November 7th meeting.
Questions?
This is pretty straightforward. I think this is reflects how we see growth out in the counties now. I think it takes away with that which was impediment. So this is pretty easy.
I agree with that. Thank you for the explanation of it, because that's the topic originally came up in a communication from Mr. Renell, who's very well detail oriented, which is good. He's a civil engineer. But I was trying to follow some of those maps at first, so
sure.
I think we just worked to get it down to kind of our understandable level. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm just appreciative that we work with those that are impacted by this. To come up with something that's a much more clear and is workable for everybody. If there's nothing further here, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 276. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I would move first consideration of Ordinance Number 276, amending Chapter 88.04, access requirements, with second reading to occur on November 20th.
Second. Motion and second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 276 passes on first reading. Second reading will be next week. All right, first consideration of Ordinance 278, amending 89 home businesses, and Chapter 90 conditional uses.
All right, home businesses, the amendment came about through our annual review. Currently, we review home business permits annually. They're an administrative review, and we were consistently seeing issues involving compliance with the ordinance, concerns about having more than the one employee beyond the number of people that reside in the dwelling on the premise, use of more than one building for the business, and then outside storage. So we put together the draft and went to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and there was some really good discussion, and probably one of the most insightful things that came from that was that our ordinance, like many ordinances, don't have anything in place to address businesses that have plans to grow, whether it be a minimal amount of growth or more of a significant type of growth. And with this amendment, we have that capability. So what is being proposed is two different methods to consider growth for a home business. One is considered a minimal easing of the requirements. A minimal easing of the requirement would be an application that would be submitted. It would be reviewed by the Planning and Development Director. There are some criteria that would be reviewed as to what a minimal easing is. And it would be something where maybe more than one employee is added, a small garden shed is added for storage, and they would use a space outside for outside storage that would be screened from adjacent properties and from the road right away. So again, this is administratively reviewed. There's a provision that allows for an appeal for the Planning and Development Director's decision. Planning and Development Director also has the ability, upon receiving the application for a minimal easing, if he or she believes that it's something that would be more of a significant easing of the requirement, to request the submittal of a significant easing, which a significant easing of the requirement will follow the conditional use permit process. There will be the application, but prior to that, we start with conceptual review of all the departments in the county. If there's outside entities, cities that would have an impact, they would be invited to review the application. But it would be reviewed by county staff. It would be taken to the Planning and Zoning Commission for review and recommendation. And then ultimately, they would go to the Board of Adjustment for action. With the significant or substantial easing, there's a transition element that's required. They have to be able to demonstrate plans to leave that site and go to a district that's zoned for that use. So if they want to do something that meets the criteria of a significant easing, they have to have a transition plan. And they can stay in that location for up to 3 years. The ordinance provision amendment allows for an extension up to 2 additional years if requested. But again, the focus with that is that they're not going to be there long term. Their vision is greater than what you would see a use for a home business. Because typically with home businesses, if they're meeting our current requirements, your neighbors are not going to likely know that a home business is being operated there, because there's going to be limited impact to that site, limited impact to neighbors, limited noise, dust, odor, traffic, those kinds of things. So that is the amendment. We also are changing, or suggesting a change from a 2-year review to a 1-year review to a 2-year biannual review. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
I talked to you about this earlier, and this all works on a proposal basis if you know about these businesses. What's your office going to do to know about these businesses?
We are going to do some outreach. We've got probably 60 or 70 home businesses that we're aware of, and there may be a few out there that we're not aware of. But we're gonna work hard to put together a outreach program to educate home businesses on the current requirements and these new provisions. We think there's going to be some excitement and some interest in knowing that home businesses have some flexibility. Again, I've worked in four different jurisdictions. I'm not aware of any, none of those jurisdictions did something like this. So, we're excited about it. Planning and Zoning Commission is excited about it. And I think it'll be fruitful and purposeful and be beneficial to the county.
Sure. Devil's advocate here. So the clock is starting in my business when you're made aware of it.
Well, there's an application submittal.
If you're outraged and you don't become aware of it, just saying, because we devil's out of here. And so you'd be on your timelines as far as, you know, extensions and whatnot. When's the clock start for that business that's there that you become aware of?
Well, I mean, we try to work with everybody that we can. But the way the ordinance is written, it would start from when they actually make the submittal. And they're supposed to be in compliance with the current requirements for at least a year, whether they're asking for a minimal easing or a substantial easing. So they need to be able to demonstrate that they are in compliance with the ordinance. We actually propose different options, but the format that's before you is what was supported by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And this is what we're asking for support for today.
Okay, no more questions.
The length of time for transition bothers me. 3 years with application or with the possibility of a 2-year extension, that's 5 years. And we're talking about home businesses that are getting compliance to begin with.
For a year.
So most companies, if they want to do a major, you know, type of growth, or they've got growth plans, 5 years is a long time. How did the commission settle on 3 years then with a 2-year possible extension as opposed to maybe 18 months or something?
Yeah, there was quite a bit of discussion back and forth. We did look at other ordinances, but we kind of oscillated between 2 and 3 years. And it really kind of depends on the business and what the plans are. You know, it might be that they want to add a building because they need more storage. Or they, what we see a lot is they have a need for a lot of employees. They need more than one employee. So I guess it really kind of depends on what the use is, what the business is. You know, we have professional insurance offices, daycare, contractors. There's all types of.
You mentioned a couple where I could see there'd be increased traffic immediately. Okay, an expansion of a daycare, an expansion of a construction company, or just up your, you know, your short list. So that's why I'm thinking, geez, if I'm the neighbor and they're expanding, and I've got this up to 3 years, and I know the ordinance says you can't impact the area. But just by virtue of all of a sudden you double your daycare and you got people driving down the road, you know, double or triple the number. So how do we deal with that if, in fact, we've told them, yeah, you have 3 years to go ahead and relocate? I mean, you're violating right now, but we've just told you it's okay to go in
but
3 years.
Of course, I don't think there's anything in here that automatically says we're going to say okay, right?
Right.
There's a process through which they can tell us what they're doing. And I think in the cases that you cite, you'd say, no, that's not a reasonable growth plan. And we're just looking for the growth plan.
Yeah, it would be a conditional use permit application that would be submitted. So we have a notification requirement that we send out to all property owners within a quarter mile. So they would be involved in this review and can participate with input, come to the public hearings before Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustments. So their input would be considered as well.
I do think it's unique and it's stretching the box. to go ahead and provide accommodations for transition. So that, so I like
to potentially provide.
Does not address the problem you originally were noticing, which is that people were in non-compliance to begin with.
Right.
And did the commission talk about addressing that in the future?
Well, and I think, like what Marty got to, the outreach, you know, it's one thing to put it in writing and you know, establish it for our codification process, but I think we have a responsibility as staff to do what we can to communicate using our website and getting out from the office and go out and talk to people about what we're working on. So I'm thinking that by doing that, that's going to help. Will it solve all of the issues? Probably not, but it's going to go a long way toward...
It's not, but again, it's us doing what we can do. And occasionally you're going to have items that fall outside the bell curve, right? I mean, they're on the fringes. And this at least gives us a mechanism to try to deal with those in cases where the business owner is truly trying. This doesn't address somebody who is knowingly and willfully flaunting our regulations, right? We deal with those where we deal with it. Two quick points. One, just a note that ag-related business on A1 is treated a little differently than any of this, and that we're not changing that in here. And the second one to note is Board of Supervisors always has the ability, if the Board of Supervisors so chooses, to rezone a property which could impact this. That's not addressed in here, rightly not addressed in here. But just two components that I view this document as intending to give flexibility and a pathway to existing businesses to grow. This is how you can grow. This, you know, this is acceptable. It's not as a limiting factor.
Right. Those are good points.
Yep. Anything further before we open the public hearing?
Nope. We've had a very good discussion here. I hope the public is aware of the fact that we are just trying to give everybody that wants to start their own business in the unincorporated a pathway to future success, but we have an obligation to the people that live around them to maintain their quality of life. And that's as I see it.
Okay, if we're going to have zoning, then we need to adhere to what those zoning standards say, right? Okay, so let's open the public hearing. Anybody wishes to address anything in Ordinance 278 that we've been discussing, come right on up. And seeing no one move the microphone, turn to the board for potential action.
Move consideration of Ordinance 278, amending Chapter 89 of the Home Businesses and Chapter 90, Conditional Uses, Table 90-1, Table of Conditional Uses, and setting a second reading on the 20th of November.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Jerry, anything to add?
Nothing to add. Thank you.
All right. Absolutely. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. All right. Last public hearing item for consideration of Ordinance 279, and this one is campgrounds.
Campgrounds. Commercial campground and RV parks. I think the Board of Supervisors will recall that we had an amendment to allow cabins to be constructed at commercial campground and RV parks. So these are private uses, not county parks. So what this amendment does is address the chapter 90, which provides the detailed standards for commercial campgrounds and travel trailers. There's really limited changes. The biggest change, though, is when we went to the Planning and Zoning Commission, there was a lot of discussion about our current language and how we restrict a private business on the time of year that their customers can go to their facilities. So, because currently we, you know, during the winter months, we only permit customers, whether it be in a cabin or in an RV, to be in their facility for a total of 30 days. So all that language restricting the time of year that customers can go to a commercial campground and RV park was struck. So you're not going to see that any longer. That was actually in the definition section, Chapter 85. We really amended the provision that addresses the consecutive number of days that you can stay in a cabin. That maximum is 30 days. The maximum number of days that you can stay in an RV is 30 days. But because commercial campground and RV parks, the review process is a conditional use permit. We have language now that if a applicant, park owner, would like to have an extended stay beyond the 30 days, they have that ability to do that when they make their submittal for their conditional use permit. So that's the main thing. And then, of course, commercial cabins are not permitted in a residential manufactured housing district. However, you can have RVs through the conditional use permit submittal process. We have a few of those situations now. So those are really the two main things that we worked on. And again, the Planning and Zoning Commission was provided a tremendous amount of assistance with regard to this amendment.
Yeah. Questions or comments before we open the public hearing?
As you've seen in some of our trail courts around the county, we have a large construction project and put points to Dumont right there and points to wind turbines. So the trailer park owners are there required on their own volition, or you would be not outreaching them when they have workers that are on a temporary basis that will be staying with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is another ordinance that we're going to be doing some outreach with on the existing mobile home parks, and to let them know about this, the current standards and the amendment, that you know what the limits are, mm-hmm. and that they can extend, request an extended stay if they want to do that. Go ahead.
I thought we got rid of the 30-year limit for
30
days.
I'd like to just thank you for taking a deep look at the concern that I originally brought up about long-term rentals or these types of cabins and RV parks being used. They're supposed to be for short-term, but all of a sudden they turn into long-term rental situations. So thank you for looking at that.
Yeah, because I preface this because Burke is going to do a tremendous build-out, and I suspect you're going to see people that are journeymen, tradesmen, that will be moving into our area through the construction phase. And I think this will have some real impact early on in regards to their existence and the park owners themselves.
Although we're pretty well filled with our mobile home courts, but that doesn't mean some people will
be there. Point anchors, yeah. You'll obviously be able to do events, and Maxwell will do that. You will see, trust me, there are people there who will tuck in and fill every spot that they can, and that kind of speaks to what it is right here.
Right, it'll provide for an option.
Yeah, and again, just pointing out, this does not address what happens within municipalities.
Correct.
If a municipality has something, they can set their own, but like 20 acres is the perfect example. Yep.
Okay. No other questions?
All right, in that case, let's open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 279. See no one move to the microphone, close the public hearing, turn to the board.
I move first consideration of Ordinance Number 279, amending Chapter 85 definitions and Chapter 90 conditional uses related to commercial campground and travel trailer parks, with second reading, slated for November 20th.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. You guys did a great job working with Planning and Zoning Commission to get what I think is more clarity in these four areas, and I'm really appreciative. I'm excited to see what, if any, comments we get here over the next couple of weeks.
We'll let you know. Thank you.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Ordinance 279 is adopted on first reading. We'll have second reading next week. That takes us to additional items. First one is discussion and consideration of revised employee recognition policy. And we're talking about waiving the 7-day review. So this is something that we've been talking about for years. And it's just a possibility of allowing some flexibility on what kind of award, whether it's going to be a coffee mug or a tumbler or something like that, and let our HR director make that call.
Right. So I've added a little bit of language over the last couple of years. We've gotten some feedback from employees on different awards. And so I just put in there, the only change to the policy is that it's highlighted. And that is why I'm asking for the 7-day review to be waived. Items that would be given to the, or not given, choices to the employees, they would be like a police pullover with the Story County logo, a cooler, totes,
This has already been designed and is ready.
And is equal or lesser value than what we have?
We do have some restrictions when it comes to awards and recognition and taxability. So everything has been developed within those guidelines and within the current policy.
Questions or comments? This doesn't take away anything our employees get. It just adds to their options. Yeah, Marty.
You know, that world wearing a watch now that was just such a thing. And my, actually, all four of my wristwatches were given to me for awards. And the fact that you up the choices, because I've asked people about what I see on their desks in regards to their time of service, and some of them are a little bit more enthused about it than others. And I think if you give people some choices, then it just allows them to have something that really means as much as we value their service.
We added some glass awards a few years ago just because we had comments every 5 years at the clock once you get to 10 or after 15. So we wanted some different options.
Absolutely. Well, and the best thing that we can do is if we can have some kind of award that they're actually going to use and enjoy, that's the best. So questions, comments, or motion?
I would move consideration of the revised employee recognition policy and appreciate Melissa's time spent on this.
Waiting 7-day review.
I would second and do.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It's adopted. We're not having a 7-day review. Thanks, Alyssa.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is discussion consideration of the county appealing the order of the court sustaining the writ of certiorari in Polinsky versus Story County Board of Adjustment. Ethan, so we went into closed session at the end of last week's meeting and discussed this in closed session. At that point, determined that there was potential action for the board to take, so we put it on this week's agenda for discussion. Ethan, take us through that.
Yes, yeah, correct. So we don't want to discuss or mention the legal strategy involved in closed session, but I think it's fair to say that we retained outside counsel to assist in this writ case because it's Polinsky 1, 2, and 3. So I think the ability to appeal what we believe is a wrong decision arrived in Polinsky 1 will have a snowball effect affecting Polinsky 2 and 3. And so based on recommendation of outside counsel and the county attorney's office, we'd recommend that the board of supervisors direct us to appeal that case and to hopefully change it.
Super. And the only thing I would add, hopefully not treading anywhere close to what we need to not be talking about is this is involving a case that went through our Board of Adjustment, and we may feel pretty strongly that we need to push this as far as we can.
That's correct. This is the Wanda McKay property, the Robo Trust Wanda McKay property, large acreage on the south side of Ames. And the neighbor didn't like what the zoning board adjustment did in issuing a CUP. And so they exercised their legal rights to challenge that through the writ. That writ was sustained by the district court. We feel the district court relied upon some outdated case law. We believe there's a chance to appeal this. And in the interest of justice, we think it's the right thing to do, and we refer the board to direct us to appeal.
Okay.
Ethan, is it appropriate to discuss about the situation about where we are in our insurance policy when it comes to calls?
Well, yeah, I think it's appropriate that we can discuss that we considered the cost and that there is the policy limits. We're well within the policy limits.
That's what I was looking for the public.
I have comfort going forward. A little low to say it's kind of a potential to be a landmark ruling, but the thing is, I think Story County is in an ideal position at this moment to move this forward, and I have comfort in spending whatever dollars that we have to do it. I think the counsel that you retained spoke very eloquently, was very clear, and I have our support desire to move this.
Further discussion or a motion?
I would move consideration of county appealing the order of court sustaining the writ of certiorari in Polinsky versus Story County Board of Adjustment, as presented by Ethan Anderson.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye.
Thank you.
Please be aware. Next, discuss consideration of an additional HVAC unit for the server room for the jail at the Justice Center. Unbudgeted funds, $10,275. Jovi, John, and Micah with us today.
Good morning.
Yes.
roll in the back. You have a message.
I mean, the gist of the situation we're in is the jail has recently upgraded their camera system, which requires some new hardware in a very small, server room. It's located right in the jail. So we hit the threshold, and now the room's too hot. So we're running about 30, 40 degrees Fahrenheit over what ideally we would be. So if we get much hotter in the room, we're going to start having server failures for their cameras, which is a big security risk.
Yeah, and I just think it's important to note that this building was constructed 18 years ago, where we started, and designed 22 years ago, and we weren't thinking about server rooms at that point. And so it didn't get designed to the specs that we run on today.
Yep.
So, board, questions or comments?
You don't look like a very smart administrator if you don't justify the small dollar ask here to take into account what we've done. So I have comfort in moving on.
Let's talk about the $10,000. How are the budgets running right now? Are you expecting that we're going to have to dip into our reserve funds to pay for this, or do you think you're going to be able to accommodate this?
We should be able to accommodate this at the time, and if it becomes an issue later on, we'll address it then. But as of now, it doesn't look like we would run into the trouble.
Yeah, so standard practice has been for the board to go ahead and approve something like this if we deem that it's worthy of approval, noting that it's our expectation that it's going to get absorbed in existing dollars, but recognizing that this may be an issue that comes back, but we're not granting approval right now to go over budget. Okay.
I'll make the motion.
Okay. If that's what you're looking for. Yeah, ready for a motion unless you guys have questions.
Exactly.
I'm not asking questions. I've already said what I need to say.
Okay. I move approval of additional heating vacuum air conditioning unit for a server room for jail for the jail at the Justice Center for $10,275, which is unbudgeted.
Second. Motion and second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Pass. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, Joe.
All right, next we get a quarter report from IRVM, Joe Quakon.
Yeah, it's Ed, this is one of some of the funnest things you get to do as a supervisor, but listen to these presentations.
I'll be right back.
Of course.
Go and tell. Joe always brings show and tell.
Who knows what you're talking about tonight?
Bag of tricks.
All right. Good morning, board.
Good morning, Joe.
So I'm starting something new. I'm writing it out in narrative. We'll see how far I go. If I see something shiny, you know how it works. I'm going to take my glasses off, too, so I can read it. So, it was August 7th since the last time I stopped in. It's been some pretty weird weather out there. We call it kind of the monsoon season. So I'm going to try to do in the next 15 minutes or less is give you an update where we left off, where we're going beyond the next time, up to the next time we get together, and a little show and tell that reflects some budget items that you folks support and things like that. So here we go. Well, one little side note, I was talking to our Department of Transportation today about some things, specifically the Living Roadway Trust Fund, where we do get some funding. We write grants and, for instance, the hydro seeder and some things like that. And I was asking about how many counties had a hydro seeder, but we don't really know that unless I did a big listserv. But I'm guessing there's over, backing up, there's 41 integrated roadside vegetation management counties. That means there's 41 plans submitted to the Iowa Department of Transportation for counties. There's four for cities, and there's six more coming online. And cities meaning like Dallas or not Dallas County, but Cedar Rapids, things like that, that are, and maybe Ames at some point where they annex a lot and they need a vegetation manager in to do things that maybe I used to do or my cohorts would do. So So as far as hydro seeders go, I'm going to talk about those a little bit today because it's been raining. That's one of the main tools that we use to seed when it's this wet. And Darren and their crew have done quite a bit of construction. University, if you've been down University, where they've repaved that. We've had four culverts done, the one on Sand Hill Trail. That bridge, I think, is getting paved. There's already been the poured, the deck on that's been poured. So a lot of seeding. But anyway, so I'm going to start where we left off. That was a side note. We left off with contract spraying. And, right, Marty, there was some positive commentary. There was some negative commentary about our contract spraying. But at the end, after these folks were gone, you know, they got three of the townships out of the four done. We ran out of money. And we haven't talked budgeting, but I did get one outfit to come back and revisit five more townships, which would be Franklin and then Washington and then all the ones that go, I think that's Grant, Nevada, and New Albany. So the next tier, we'll talk about that at another point as far as getting a contractor. But a lot of positive commentary coming back from folks that live out in the rural area about how good a job they did. And some folks coming into my shop asking what they use and things like that. So I give them a thumbs up. With that brought us to the beginning of August. My seasonal staff went and did other things, so it left Tyler and myself to kind of catch up. We didn't get a lot done as far as roadside spraying, but again, there was some other commentary about getting drainage ditch spraying done or caught up, and so we tried as hard as we could. Tyler does a lot of that, but I got into UTV and did some work too, and we actually did pretty well. And that's about the time the rains came and the wind, and you got to play that by ear. So I have it down here somewhere. Hold on, I think I got to switch gears. See, that's what happens when you write it down. So the drainage ditches that we did get done were Hardin Story 3, Hamilton Story 1 up by Story City. We got 75% of Milford 32 and 75% of Grant. Okay, we didn't get all, and when I say percent done, there's always going to be some brush that you miss. Okay, that's the nature of the beast. But I'm talking about traveling the whole linear miles, and I don't have those miles. I didn't figure that out today. Any questions on DD spraying or that? It's been so long ago. And somewhere in there, guess what? The Calder field day happened right in the middle of that. That was good energy. I don't think we talked about that much, but that was that, you know, and that's still ongoing. So
will you be having any kind of role in that as that evolves, or is that a done thing as far as your touch?
No, there actually we're talking about putting some more seed down because a lot of it washed. There's been some washing, and they've talked about getting a better design in to stair step that open that ditch. And I forget, Tim, one of the Calder boys are putting in a pollinator field buffer along the creek, which I don't really have a lot to do with, but I just went out and kind of helped them design the project. And then something they'll be working on is going to be a saturated buffer at the bottom of that where it dumps into the west branch of Indian Creek. So literally I don't think I'll be a part of the process itself except maybe some technical advice. Is that your question?
Yes.
All right. We also did, and I want to keep it on a positive note, you know, equipment failures happen, but we did with our sprayer, and so, you know, this will come out of my equipment maintenance light item. We have a two-year-old spray engine on one of our sprayers, and the piston scored. I'm not going to describe what that means, but it means the engine kind of got shot, and we don't really know why. 2 years old, the oil's good. So we had that rebuilt. We just got that back a couple weeks ago and have that unit put back together. But obviously, spray season's over. It's 11 degrees last time I looked at the thermometer today. So the rains came, okay, and we stayed busy. At the same time, I was able to hire two seasonal help, which hasn't happened in a long, long time in the fall. So I was able to take some money from the seasonal help that quit early, okay, and they weren't disgruntled, they just had other stuff to do, and what we budgeted for. So I actually have now two more seasonal help helping us, which is great. We've been doing a lot of seeding, and that helped with the seed harvest. you remember what the seed harvest means. That means that we tried out the new 4400 John Deere combine, and we're still trying it. But what happened was, by the time we started combining prairie seed, well, kind of like there's a lot of corn in the field still, was about the time, looking back at the calendar, where I would be finishing. So we were 3 weeks behind. And when you're talking prairie seed, a lot of it falls off. And it really falls off when it's wet and windy. It gets heavy and it's gone. So we did what we could. We had the Jolly Green Giant, as I call it, and our two little red combines, all three running, all staff, that we, you know, on all hands on deck, and we did what we could do. That seed is bagged, dried and bagged up, but I have not taken my nerd scope out to look at it to decide what is seed and what is chaff and what are percent, so I can get an idea what and help Mike out designs when they do a lot of seeding on what our percent seed is and what we may have to budget for. Okay. Yeah. So I've lost my way here.
You're doing a good job with that whole right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. So,
that's a compliment. Okay.
It's not taking away anything from your presentation.
Woo. All right. So, in the meantime, when it was, you know, so I hired these folks, and it rained for 3 weeks. So we were able to do some work in the shop, and we did some work at our grounds, the fill station. We redesigned some things and did some maintenance. I don't know if the board remembers that our boom mower went down in about August, too. It was mowing brush on the heart of Iowa Trail. Now, the boom mower is about a 1999 John Deere. Good unit, but the axle went out because of that big, heavy boom. So we took it into a dealership around here, and it was a $12,000 fix. So we had talked about taking the mower off and putting on another unit that Darren had. After looking at that, it was a $12,000 swap over just to get the mower off the old one and do it and put that on a tractor that's not that new anyway. So we decided not to. We took this tractor down to a private individual who's a mechanic, and he fixed it for a fraction of the cost. He went down to Colfax Parts, tractor gray guard down there, got a part, put it in. For instance, it was $2,700 compared to, I think it was about a $13,000 estimated repair. So what I'm trying to say is it deserves to look around and see who can help you. And that was kind of a neat deal. So we still have that unit. So after harvest, or in between harvest, we started seeding. And as you know, there's a lot of seeding to do after all the erosion and all the rain and things. So we're trying to catch up. So I brought a couple things to show you. These are what we do, and I need to thank the board for supporting this kind of thing, because a lot of counties don't do this. All right, a lot of counties have hydro seeders and don't add mulch. Now, this isn't just the catch or show and tell, but does anybody know what this is? It's not a Nerf. Yeah, this is what used to be a silt log. So, and I have that sheet here from our distributor. We have done 1,200 linear feet of these silt logs in Story County, just to help stop erosion and protect our water. These are what you would call Laura silt checks that go in the bottom of the ditch, and they have big 2x4s or 2x2 stakes that you drive through. Okay, so 1,200 feet of this, and I'm not the only one doing it. Darren's crews do it too, or Andrew's crews, or whoever you want to call them. So we all work together, and the main thing is to keep our water quality up. We're not held by any standards, just our own, in the county level, and so we do the best we can. We feel good about that. The next thing that we budget for is mulch. Okay, this is that green stuff you see out. A lot of contractors are doing it. You see what we do all the time in Story County. And it is a product. I don't know if you want to. I can just throw it at you here, but not really throw it.
So
you can open it up. That is recycled newspaper and wood combination. So it feels pretty good for me to get our hydro seeder, which was 80% grant funded. Okay, we're using recycled newspaper recycled wood, and if I'm filling out in the country, the fill station, we pump water out of the creek.
Right.
And so we're not real water devant. So it feels pretty good. And if the seed is harvested, that's all in-house stuff. We got a pretty good system going. You guys support that, and I thank you. So that was my show and tell, not too crazy. By the way, this is just wood fibers. They make all kinds of different ones, but this is good enough for us. So what's coming up? Well, we're still seeding. We would like to try to get some prescribed fire in now that the corn is coming out of the field and they're working the fields a little bit. We don't want to do a lot of prescribed fire with corn stalks.
Right.
That's a bad thing.
Potentially.
and so, you know, the next thing, we'll probably finish this month out seeding. Then we need to focus on brushwork and logging in our drainage districts. We're going to move back up to Hardin Story 3. And then there's one that you probably don't know a lot about, but it's New Albany 85. And that is the area that comes into the east end of Hickory Grove. And we're going to get some brush out of there. There's some willows growing over, a 36-inch tile. No, 18.
Either way, we'll over tile is not good.
Well,
it's not over tile.
We could do other things.
Yeah, all you're saying, so you probably have some impediment on that tile as well.
Well, we're looking at maybe doing a wetland there if the NRCS can help us and things. It's way out there, but that would be my ideal. So.
Yeah. Well, that would help with some of the sedimentation.
Yeah, it's all good. Wetlands are a good thing. Yes.
So we didn't like the new combine. You like the new combine? How's the new combine?
Okay, so it's hard, you know. We went and visited two other counties. One private person that seeds over by Guthrie Center, and then we went to Linn County where they have the same unit and tried to take pictures, talk to them on how to set it up. There's a lot of things we had to take off, little manufacturing, how to auger the seed out. So once we figured that out, we liked it, but it took us, Marty, about the whole time as the seed was falling. If we'd have had a normal year where we could have started when the seed was ready.
Yeah,
so absolutely. I mean, it's 13 feet wide compared to 6, so we were able to, you know, over double and go.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is we didn't have a great harvest year, but it didn't have anything to do with the equipment.
No.
It had everything to do with it.
And clearly, you made better. It was only one year. I will leave a marker down for this board, the future board, as he has got a building west of his shop that needs to come down. And I would ask that the new board provide the means to do it. I don't know.
Not only needs to come down, we need to look at what needs to be there.
And so what do you need in that sense? Just the building drop, the tin removed? What are you looking for? If you could get your wish granted today, what would that be?
So I've done a little research on that, and I don't want to step on anybody's toes, so I think that there has been an interest in one person taking it down, a little bit of this that would do it, and it just the board needs to get together with my supervisor, and I think we can get it out of there. And that's demolish and haul off.
It gives you a sign to do whatever the board would so choose going forward, and I think.
So we just talked.
Be done either way. When you make a decision or in an interim prior.
We just talked about this 3 weeks ago when Mike and I were talking about budget, and we haven't really revisited it. So I think it's right there.
Yeah, the reality is the building's coming down. Either we're going to choose to take it down or it's going to come down on its own.
That is exactly what we have going on over there.
So anything else for Joe?
No, I just want to make him more aware of that.
Thank you.
That he's done in that behalf.
Absolutely. Good job, Joe.
Thank you. Yeah.
Cheers.
Now, other reports, update on our draft watershed implementation matrix. Go ahead. Good morning again, Leanne.
Good morning. I don't think I said that the first time. Today is, I'm picking up Joe's nest here. Last
last week, informational meetings, presentations were held to both the Story County Conservation Board and Planning and Zoning Commission on the draft watershed assessment implementation matrix. I'm here to, before you today, just to give you an update of where we are in the time frame from this point forward. We are trying to schedule a joint meeting between the Conservation Board and Planning and Zoning Commission for November 27th. At this point, it's actually kind of iffy. We're not sure if we're going to have a quorum of the Planning and Zoning Commission. So we might be having to push that back a week later. Our goal is to get in front of the board early December with this draft implementation matrix so that, one, if there are any budgetary implications, we could start building those in. Cannot guarantee that will occur. It's very important that we have that joint meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission and Conservation Board. We're doing a joint meeting because that'll be the quickest, but if we have to, we'll go back to individual meetings of the two. Just quickly, some follow-up from those two meetings. The staff, the working group, met last week to discuss this. Four kind of areas of emphasis or areas of direction. Develop a criteria for the low, medium, and high prioritization that the working group did include in the draft matrix. We all have worked together over so many years, I think, and doing the C2C implementation matrix. We kind of knew what we meant by just saying, yeah, that's a medium priority or a high. Point was very well taken, though. You cannot necessarily read our minds all the time.
Yeah, we need it beyond what you guys know. We need a layperson to be able to read it and understand why it has become a medium.
Mm-hmm. And we do have, we met last week and had those ideas set forth. Establish estimated budget amounts and funding sources. I'll be honest with you, when you see it, there will be a lot of TBDs in this because some of these are outside of really what we can try to even crystal ball is from the amounts. But then there are others that we have pretty good amounts to share with you. And then establish some time frames. We went back and visited the C2C implementation matrix. Those are going to be built into this as well, and you'll see that through our prioritization as well, too. There's a logical nexus between the two. And then what did we exclude, and then why? So we'll prepare a memo to send back to the Planning and Zoning Commission and Conservation Board, and of course, include the Board of Supervisors as well, in order to guide and facilitate the discussions on November, hopefully 27th. We've identified some questions that we'd like them to respond to in advance to help us through the discussion. One, we're asking to go back and revisit the SurveyMonkey and personally take that survey. Not necessarily go on SurveyMonkey and do it, but we'll give them proper tools that they can do that. Then, do you think time frames are reasonable and achievable? The third question would be, is there a county department and or outside organization that should administer all aspects of the matrix? Is this the county staff person, existing or new, and or including outside agency or organization? Fourth question is, if I can read my writing, how do these projects compare to other current or proposed projects in terms of importance? I'm asking them to rate one low, five high. And then number five, what are other water quality improvements and practices we should consider that are not represented in the matrix? Which we asked a similar question with the SurveyMonkey, but again, reiterating that. As of the time of presenting last week to both the Conservation and Planning and Zoning Commission, we only had five individuals that had responded to the SurveyMonkey. We had a list of about 40 individuals that we sent. We identified as stakeholders. We sent out to them. Did some personal follow-up, so I think we still need to consider reaching out to them, and a lot of us have been doing that, working to get those answers or responses. Are there questions thus far of what's been happening?
So when we had originally assigned this to the committee, it was a little unclear who was taking lead or what department would take the lead, et cetera. Now, you're up here, you're reporting to us, so then I heard consulting or, you know, meeting with P&Z and with the Conservation Board. So who actually does the committee feel would take the lead at this point for implementation?
That's not an answer we have at this point. And if you do look at the draft implementation matrix, it was in a memo that went a couple weeks ago to you guys.
Thank you. It was not posted on the website. Was there a reason that we didn't get it posted?
We're not doing anything with the matrix right now. So right now, all that's happening is the matrix is going from Planning and Zoning Commission and Conservation Board to build something that's coming to the Board of Supervisors. We haven't gotten
that. This is why it wasn't attached.
I really don't have any attachments.
Okay.
But there's an overall goal with several bullet points that does get to the heart of that. The countywide, bear with me, I do want to read this. Countywide watershed assessment conducted in 2018 was developed to serve as a starting point in guiding future watershed management decisions. The assessment is a high-level overview of current watershed status. The assessment is not intended to be a final and static report. In addition to the actions outlined in the implementation plan, the county will, first bullet, work to identify where further study is needed, regularly review prioritizations in the assessments and make necessary adjustments, identify who oversees the effort and strategies, establish schedule for development of watershed management authorities, define and dedicate ongoing resources for further study and implementation, and then last bullet, review the implementation plan annually. So at this point, the working group we're still working through a lot of this, but that is what we see as the overall goal too.
Yeah, but Laura's asked a great question here. And so let's just try, while we aren't in a position to answer that question at this point, let's at least answer how that's going to get answered, right?
Thank
so there's three, absolutely, three major questions that we've got to deal with. Now that we've got this done, okay, great, we've got the report. Now what are we going to do with it? We've got to start. We aren't going to be able to do everything, especially immediately, right? There's going to be certain things we're going to be able to do sooner rather than later. What are those things? Who's going to do it? Is that in-house? Which department is it? If it's a department, is it existing HAC staff? Is it new staff? Are we going to contract with an outside entity? We've got to define who's going to do it, what we're going to do, who's going to do it, and then what resources are, and primarily the Board of Supervisors, what resources are we going to be able to put behind the what and the who? But we've got to get to all that in order, and that's not going to happen for us until... Well, it's going to happen before we send the budget that's ready to publish by that third week in January. But that, it kind of is those first few weeks in January as we're working through the budget. There's staff implications. There's all kinds of different implications that hit us in January.
And I guess I'm feeling a little bit of that 6 weeks into the new year when we start talking the budgets, and that's why I'm asking. But I did hear you basically, you know, Rick's recap what we were kind of looking at here, but I just want to be clear here that I'd like for us to be able, as we work on the budget for 2020, to be able to know kind of what those steps and who that would be, especially if we have any cleanup that we need to do as far as assigning staff.
Well, that's a must.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't, if we're truly going to put resources into this, then we've got to have some idea of why we're putting resources in. And if we don't know that by the third week in January, there's no way we can
That's
do
right.
it. Which is the reason that we got this push. It's the reason that Leanne would like to have a joint meeting in late November. May or may not happen. But the back-end timeline doesn't change when we have to know if we're going to do something.
And then another question I have as the group's dealing with this is about how does this affect the two major watersheds we have, the South Skunk? When I say affect, I mean as far as the watershed management authority groups themselves. You know, what role does the South Skunk and the Squaw Creek, what do those two watershed authority management authorities, how do they fit into this issue?
There is, when you look at the implementation matrix, it's categorized programmatic, regulatory, and capital improvements or capital projects. Under the programmatic, there's a language that in essence is an ongoing commitment on the part of the Board of Supervisors to continue with existing and future watershed management authority. And Story County has an incredible record of being the lead in establishing the WMAs that we can positively affect. And I think the assessment assumes, rightfully, that is a role that the county will still maintain.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and I would just underscore that. So the beauty about the two existing watershed authorities, one that is truly up and operational and starting to do good work.
We have three.
4 Mile, right?
Yeah, I always leave 4 Mile out, and I know. I appreciate it. We got, 100 yards of 4 Mile. That's primarily it's a good group. But the ones that Story County seems to have the largest voice in, we've got two now. One that is fully operational and starting to make some decent progress towards starting to make progress. And the other one that's just getting formed. Those are out of the gate, right? We're already starting to see what the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority can do. We're hopeful that the headwaters of South Skunk gets up and operational and starts to do some things. This is more interesting to me in terms of what pieces of those two are we going to take and replicate for the rest of our watersheds in Story County, and what pieces are we going to try to kind of reinvent the wheel. That's all part of the conversation that we've yet to have, of course. Yep.
And just an update on the headwaters one here. It was fully approved, signed, recorded, and has been filed to Secretary of State. And now is in the hands of Prairie Rivers to organize the meeting of the formal watershed management authority.
I consider you are more than liaison, also an important resource for those watershed management authorities. So is there some way that you make sure that when you talk to Prairie Rivers and they go forward that we've got plenty of notice, all of the supervisors about me, just so that we know, especially on this new one, as we listen.
Yeah, and I have not received anything back on the headwaters, so I will contact Kayla with Prairie Rivers and share that.
Good. Any questions or comments for Leanne?
No.
Leanne, thanks.
Thank you.
Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on anything you'd like to comment on. Come right on up to the microphone. Cindy, you got any good words of wisdom for us today?
No, but it's very kind of you to ask.
Absolutely. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to liaison assignments. Marty.
We had an election last week, and I'd like to compliment Lynn Merkin on her success, and I only hope that she has the good fortune and the good luck that I had. It is a wonderful job. You have a good time to be a supervisor in Story County. It's been a well-run organization, and I think you had the opportunity to do great things. One of my personal high points of being on the board is right behind us on this plaque, and we're going to go break ground in an hour and a half at a facility that is going to double in size and will be one of the largest businesses in the county. And last but not least, I had a wonderful time at the DCAP meeting last week, laying money for organizations that help children and their parents to have more successful outcomes than they otherwise have, and some really little stuff that supervisor does.
Absolutely. Yep. Morris.
Boost continues to move forward slowly in discussing how we will go ahead and fund scholarships through OR, whether it be a block grant for early childhood, child care, et cetera. So that was the highlight of the Boost meeting last week, which I participated in by phone. Okay. I've got this afternoon, HRDA is making progress on the insurance problem that we encountered. I believe almost all of the drivers for our two contract agencies have been trained. There's one who's out due to this spell. So we'll get him trained, but that means we're going to be able to pull the insurance rates down. So I'm looking forward to that conversation this afternoon by phone. We'll be done engaging resources. And I'm going to announce this Thursday, not last Thursday, but this Thursday is the meeting, the second meeting for the Story County Opioid Task Force presentation.
And so were you all on that Thursday?
No, I went.
You went.
It was on my calendar. That's why I had it wrong. So I will admit I actually drove to Mary Greeley that night and went, I got the wrong Thursday night. And so this Thursday at 7 o'clock at Mary Greeley Auditorium, Betsy Myers Auditorium, and it is people talking about their personal stories and their family stories involved with opioids. Thank you.
Super. Let's see. For me, I've got my first meeting of the International Economic Development Task Force through NACO actually later this afternoon after we do the groundbreaking. I'm excited about that. I would be remiss if I didn't echo Marty's comments. Congratulations to Linda. The reality is if Linda, and I'm confident that she will, but if she works as hard at being a supervisor as she did in the campaign, we're in good shape. That doesn't take away from the fact that we're losing a really good one in Marty Chitty. Marty came to the board under really, really tough circumstances and dug in from day one. And Story County, Marty, is a better place because of your time here. And I think everybody would echo appreciation for what you put in. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch what's next for Marty Chitty, because you're going to have a great adventure. And I know I appreciate the time I got to spend with you here.
Thank you.
Anything further for us, or I take a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.